Welcome to Crime, Corruption, and Cocktails, the true crime podcast where we look at cases of corruption and negligence and examine their historical and cultural implications. Today, I'm drinking an espresso martini. What do you have, Del?
I am drinking a mango margarita, and on this week's episode, we look at the 2010 West Memphis shooting that left two police officers dead. This shooting was tied to the Sovereign Citizen movement and their false belief that laws don't apply to them. Let's start with looking at the perpetrators of this ambush, father and son, Jerry and Joseph Kane. Jerry R. Kane Jr. was born in 1964 in Ohio. Jerry Kane ran a debt evasion business and traveled the country giving paid seminars on methods of, quote unquote, forestalling foreclosures, lecturing that money and home loans are fictitious and that people can simply sign a quit claim deed and live in their houses mortgage free. His concepts were based on the fraudulent schemes advocated by the redemption movement. According to his girlfriend, Kane's resentment of the government began in the late 1990s when one of his daughters died at the age of 6 weeks of infant death syndrome and an autopsy was performed against his wishes. Kane grew distrustful of authorities, gave up his driver's license and employment as a trucker, and became increasingly antagonistic towards Ohio law enforcement. Based on a 2004 conversation with Jerry Kane, Clark County Sheriff Gene Kelly had expressed concern that Kane would pose a dangerous threat to law enforcement officers. According to Kelly, Kane had complained about being quote-unquote enslaved by a judge who had sentenced him to serve 6 days of community service for driving with an expired license plate and no seatbelt. Born in 1993, Joseph Kane followed in his father's footsteps with his hatred for the government, especially police officers. He was homeschooled and by age 9 could recite the Bill of Rights and carried a toy gun everywhere he went. According to Sheriff Kelly, quote, the child had been taught not to trust law enforcement, end quote. In 2006, the elder Kane was indicted for forgery and theft of a car by deception in Montgomery County, Ohio, and there was an outstanding warrant at the time of his death. Kane has said that driver's licenses were a quote-unquote debt contract, and a month before the shooting, he was arrested in New Mexico for driving without a license. On an internet radio show, Kane said he was picked up at a quote-unquote Nazi checkpoint, spent 47 hours in custody, and planned to sue for $100 per hour of custody. In fact, he was released on a $1,500 bond and did not appear for his court date 3 days before the shooting. Around 2006, Kane started posting about quote-unquote redemption theories on a Sovereign Citizen forum. In 2007, his wife died of pneumonia. Around 2008, at the height of the mortgage crisis, Kane shifted from being an internet poster to starting his own debt elimination seminars business. Jerry Kane had recently begun a relationship with a Florida woman whom he had met at one of his seminars and who also adhered to Sovereign Citizen ideology. Shortly before the shooting, she had been involved in a protracted legal battle with her county of residence because she refused to pay a $20 dog licensing fee. Jerry Kane was unsuccessful as a motivational speaker. His seminars were sparsely attended, and he had not gained much notoriety in the Sovereign Citizen environment. He had decided to cut his tour off early, and when the shooting took place, was en route to Florida, where his last seminar was scheduled. After that, he planned to settle in Florida and start a new life there with his girlfriend.
On May 20th, 2010, around 11:36 a.m. local time, a white Plymouth Voyager minivan traveling east on Interstate 40 toward Airport Road was pulled over by West Memphis Police Officer Bill Evans. According to a spokesperson for the Arkansas State Police, Officer Evans was, quote-unquote, running drug interdiction. The vehicle driven by Jerry Kane had unusual Ohio license plates. Sergeant Brandon Potter provided backup for Evans. As a Sovereign Citizen, Jerry Kane did not have a driver's license and his van was not properly registered. He was also carrying a brick of marijuana and there were 2 arrest warrants for him, one in Ohio and one in New Mexico. Upon Potter's arrival at the scene, Evans attempted to frisk Jerry Kane. Suddenly, Kane turned and attacked Evans in a scuffle down an embankment into a ditch. At that moment, Joe Kane emerged from the passenger door of the van and opened fire with an AK-47 variant. Potter ran to the rear of Evans's police cruiser and returned fire with three shots from his .40 caliber Glock 22 handgun through the windows and taillight of Evans' cruiser in an attempt to hit Kane firing from the other side. He then took cover behind the hood of his cruiser, which was parked directly behind Evans's cruiser. Potter fired four more times at Kane but missed. Kane then fired multiple shots from his AK-47 variant through the hood of the car, striking Potter in the head with a ricochet. Both officers were fatally wounded. Potter, 39, died at the scene, and Evans, 38, died at the hospital. The suspects returned to their van and sped away. Vincent Brown, a FedEx driver from Houston, witnessed the shooting and called 911. Neither officer could make a quote-unquote officer down call due to their fatal injuries. Approximately 2 hours after the incident, Crittenden County Sheriff Dick Busby and Chief Enforcement Officer W.A. Wren stopped a minivan believed to be the suspects at a Walmart supercenter. Officers Busby and Wren were wounded in gunfire exchange with the suspects and were later hospitalized in critical condition. Wildlife Officer Michael K. Neal, responding to the brief standoff, rammed the suspect's vehicle, preventing their escape and saving the lives of Busby and Wren. Officer Neal exchanged fire with the Kanes through his windshield using his patrol rifle, killing Jerry Kane and wounding Joe Kane before exiting his vehicle and continuing the gun battle. Dozens of officers then surrounded the van, and after several more minutes of gunfire, Joe Kane was shot to death by police.
Jenny, what are your thoughts on the West Memphis shooting?
This is not something that I remember happening, and it's kind of surprising, but maybe that was also a little bit of like the state of the country at the time. Because if this had happened now, I think, I don't want to say all hell would break loose, but this would be like a major news story. I find these movements so fascinating. I hadn't heard of the Sovereign Movement before, but it does kind of remind me of some other groups that we talked about. I don't understand people that think this way, think that, I guess it's kind of like an entitlement. I mean, I'm very critical of the government and law enforcement too, but I mean, I would in no way support that. I also think it's kind of interesting too when, I guess stereotypically, you would maybe think people that are like anti-government, they do somehow still seem to support the police. So it is interesting when people are just kind of like all out against law and order. Personally, it's upsetting to me how Joe Kane was raised. I mean, as a child to have to carry, I mean, I'm sure he was doing it probably because he wanted to, but I'm sure he was influenced by his parents to carry around a toy gun everywhere and to be able to recite the Bill of Rights. Like, I don't know, that's like a red flag to me. That is frankly like what I would call indoctrination. I don't have any kind of issue with IDs and driver's license. I don't really see what the issue is. I'd be interested to hear more from this movement about like what some of their principles are. It's just so uncalled for and ridiculous when people want some type of notoriety, which it seemed like Jerry Kane did with his classes. I mean, he obviously wanted to make a living, but then the fact that he like wasn't getting notoriety within the Sovereign community, like that's kind of telling. And then, yeah, just to be like so entitled that you think you can just like do whatever you want on the road and then kill two police officers because of that and then lose your life in the process too is just mind-blowing to me. What do you think?
I agree with you. It's definitely a level of entitlement when it comes to sovereign citizens and similar movements. We're going to get into more details about their origins and beliefs a little later in this episode, but I also agree that if this had happened now, it would definitely cause a big stir, especially since a lot of the people that you would typically think would be against what the Kanes did may actually support them, and it may reveal more about their actual political ideology. The police have, especially in the last 4 or 5 years or so, and definitely before that, but with George Floyd and a lot of the other highly publicized police-involved shootings, I think this would make a lot of people think. And though I know the police get they have developed a bad reputation for some of the methods that they use. I think the Sovereign Citizen movement paint the police in a really good light, because a lot of the videos that you see, the police are just trying their best, and Sovereign Citizens are the prime example of what I would call tryhards. People that just want to be Karens and bother police officers just doing their job. And while I think people will still have a negative view of the police upon seeing it, I think this will kind of soften that opinion, because no one deserves to just be going about their job and one, have someone be a Karen to them, be a tryhard to them. And definitely in this case, looking at the two police officers who, again, was pulling someone over for something that is so typical. Your plates didn't look right, so they pulled you over. This probably happens thousands, tens of thousands of times per year. And in this case, because of who was being pulled over, two officers lost their life. And it's definitely a very unfortunate thing. So a lot of this episode is going to be focused on Sovereign Citizens. So we're going to get right into describing what the movement is, what they believe, and their origins. As we mentioned, Jerry and Joseph King identified as Sovereign Citizens. The Sovereign Citizen Movement is a loose group of anti-government activists, litigants, tax protesters, financial scammers, and conspiracy theorists based mainly in the United States. Sovereign Citizens have their own pseudo-legal belief system based on misinterpretations of common law and claim to not be subject to any government statutes unless they consent to them. Sovereign Citizens believe that the courts have no jurisdiction over people and that the use of certain procedures, such as writing specific phrases on bills they do not want to pay, and loopholes can make one immune to government laws and regulations. They also regard most forms of taxation as illegitimate and reject social security numbers, driver's licenses, and vehicle registration. Sovereign Citizens' arguments have no basis in law and have never been successful in any court. The FBI describes Sovereign Citizens as, quote, anti-government extremists who believe that even though they physically reside in this country, they are separate or sovereign from the United States, end quote. The movement appeared in the United States in the early 1970s and has since expanded to other countries. The similar Free Men on the Land movement emerged during the 2000s in Canada before spreading to other Commonwealth countries. The concept of a quote-unquote sovereign citizen whose rights are being unfairly denied originated in 1971 in the Posse Comitatus movement as a teaching of Christian Identity Minister William Potter Gill. This movement was strongly associated with white supremacist and anti-Semitic ideologies. The Posse Comitatus, which means force of the county in Latin, was a far-right anti-government movement that denounced the income tax, debt-based currency, and debt collection as tools of Jewish control over the United States. The movement may appeal to people facing financial or legal difficulties or wishing to resist perceived government oppression. As a result, it has grown significantly during times of economic or social crisis.
Most schemes promoted by sovereign citizens are ways to avoid paying taxes, ignoring laws, eliminating debts, or extracting money from the government. While the sovereign citizen movement was originally associated with white supremacism and anti-Semitism, it now attracts people of various ethnicities, including a significant number of African Americans. The latter sometimes belong to self-declared Moorish sects. The majority of sovereign citizens are not violent. However, the methods advocated by the movement are certainly illegal. Sovereign citizens notably adhere to the fraudulent schemes promoted by the redemption, quote-unquote, A4V movement. Many sovereign citizens have been found guilty of offenses such as tax evasion, hostile possession, forgery, threatening public officials, bank fraud, and traffic violations. Because some have engaged in armed confrontations with law enforcement, the FBI classifies quote-unquote sovereign citizen extremists as domestic terrorists. Terry Nichols, one of the perpetrators of the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, which we do have an episode on, subscribed to a variation of sovereign citizen ideology. In surveys conducted in 2014 and 2015, representatives of U.S. law enforcement ranked the risk of terrorism from the Sovereign Citizen Movement higher than the risk from any other group, including Islamic extremists, militias, racist skinheads, neo-Nazis, and radical environmentalists. As of the 1990s, several hundred people involved in quote-unquote common law courts operated by sovereign citizens or more broadly by the Patriot Movement have been arrested for crimes such as fraud, impersonating police, intimidating or threatening officials, and in some cases, outright violence. In 1998, a number of states passed laws outlawing the activities of these quote-unquote courts or strengthening existing sanctions. To prevent their courts from being burdened by frivolous litigation, some U.S. states have heightened penalties inflicted upon people who file baseless motions. Some courts choose to impose pre-filing injunctions against certain pro se serial litigants in order to preclude them from filing new lawsuits or documents without prior leave.
Not all members of the movement describe themselves as quote-unquote sovereign citizens, and some movement members actually regard the term sovereign citizen as an oxymoron. Sovereign citizens may prefer to label themselves by one of the following names: quote, state nationals, constitutionalists, freemen, natural people, living people, private persons, or as people seeking the truth or living on the land, end quote. The name, quote-unquote, American State National, ASN, became popular among sovereign citizens in the early 2020s, especially among followers of the far-right QAnon conspiracy theory. Sovereign citizens' legal theories reinterpret the Constitution of the United States through selective reading of law dictionaries, state court opinions, or specific capitalization, and incorporate other details from a variety of sources, including the Uniform Commercial Code, the Articles of Confederation, the Magna Carta, the Bible, and foreign treaties. They ignore the second clause of Article 6 of the Constitution, the Supremacy Clause, which establishes the Constitution as the law of the land and the United States Supreme Court as the ultimate authority to interpret it. Many consider that the county sheriff is the most powerful law enforcement officer in the country, with authority superior to that of any federal agent, elected official, or local law enforcement official. A widespread belief among sovereign citizens is that the state is not an actual government, but a corporation. American movement members consider that the corporation that purports to be the U.S. federal government is illegally controlling the republic via a territorial government in Washington, D.C. Some sovereign citizens also believe that the United States quote-unquote corporation is bankrupt. As a result, the illegitimate U.S. government is said to secretly use its citizens as collateral against foreign debt, effectively enslaving Americans. Sovereign citizens believe that this sale of American citizens takes place at the birth of each American baby through issuing their birth certificate and attributing their Social Security number.
Many sovereign citizens believe that the Uniform Commercial Code, which provides an interstate standard for such things as property ownership or bank accounts and documents that they believe apply only to their straw men, such as driver's license, is a codification of the illegitimate commercial law ruling the United States. Therefore, they consider that exploiting supposed loopholes in the UCC will help them assert their rights or invoke their special privileges and powers as quote-unquote common law citizens. American sovereign citizens posit that contemporary United States citizenship is somehow defective or fraudulent and that it curtails citizens' legitimate rights. Some sovereign citizens also claim that they can become immune to most or all laws of the United States by renouncing citizenship in a quote-unquote federal corporation and declaring only to be a citizen of the state where they reside. This process, which they refer to as quote-unquote expatriation, involves filing or delivering a non-legal document claiming their renunciation of citizenship to any county clerk's office that can be convinced to accept it. The concept of quote-unquote 14th Amendment citizens is consistent with the movement's white supremacist origins, and that it can cause adherents to believe that African Americans, having only become legal citizens after the Civil War, have far fewer rights than whites, or that only Black people have to pay federal taxes and abide by federal laws. Using arguments that rely on exacting definitions and word choice, sovereign citizens may assert a constitutional quote-unquote right to travel in a quote-unquote conveyance, distinguishing it from driving an automobile in order to justify ignoring requirements for license plates, vehicle registration, insurances, and driver's license. The right to travel is claimed based on a variety of passages, some being more commonly used among groups. One common argument from sovereign citizens is that they are quote-unquote traveling and quote-unquote not driving because they are not transporting commercial goods or paying passengers.
Jenny, what do you think of sovereign citizens, their movement, and related movements?
This is so ridiculous hearing some of this. I mean, it's obviously very picky and choosy and just kind of like they're like throwing things together, pulling things out of their ass and seeing what sticks. I mean, I guess I kind of admire them for trying to find loopholes somehow, but some of this stuff is just so ridiculous. And I don't know about you, it gives me like culty vibes, or like kind of, what are the preachers that like almost like televangelist vibes too? Like if you do this, this, and that like arbitrary thing, now you're going to like go to heaven, you won't be a US citizen, whatever, like stuff that truly doesn't matter. No surprise that it has roots related to anti-Semitism and white supremacy. I'm sure anybody could have figured that out. I do think it's interesting, though, that the movement is growing to include other more races. And I guess, again, that does just kind of go to show like the state of the country and how people are just like really pissed off with how the United States is being run. And I do think it's interesting, too. And again, no surprise that people that might, you know, believe they're a sovereign citizen are also maybe like more inclined to follow QAnon. I don't think it takes like much to kind of figure that out, and like where there's smoke, there's fire. I think it is really fascinating to hear these people, especially the fact that in not like around 10 years ago, they were considered like one of the most threatening groups of people. And I wonder where they're at on this, like the spectrum now, and like how it's morphed, if the movement, like what the numbers are of people that would like kind of fall under this. What are your thoughts?
I definitely find sovereign citizens to be so interesting because it's one of those conspiracy theories where you have to actively engage with it. You know, there's some conspiracy theories where you can believe it, but there's not anything you really have to do in your everyday life to show that you believe in that conspiracy theory. But with sovereign citizens, this is what they dedicate their time to. This is the topic of all their conversations. And according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, there's about 300,000 followers of the sovereign citizen ideology in the United States. So, I mean, in a country of 330 some odd million people, they're a very tiny fraction, but I feel like because they're growing and because of their connections with groups that have a wider appeal and higher numbers, it's definitely something that I see expanding in the coming years, especially as we approach another presidential election here in the U.S. One that has the similar rumblings as 2020, where if people don't get the candidate that they want in, they're going to claim some nefarious methods are bound, right? And during the Capitol, the January 6th attacks, sovereign citizens were, you know, up and down and well represented within the ranks of people that ultimately decided to ambush the Capitol and Capitol police officers, which, again, the anti-law enforcement element is quite strong in sovereign citizens' movements. And while, yes, most of them are not violent, it is concerning that when they do get to be violent, it's seemingly the most extreme forms. It's having an AK-47 variant and killing police officers. It's helping to plan and execute the Oklahoma City bombings. Like, these are not small, isolated events. And again, I just think that it's very telling that while in general they seem to be a nuisance for law enforcement officers, that nuisance can become really deadly really fast. And yeah, just thinking about their beliefs and how it definitely does seem to be a collection of, again, like you said, cherry picking what they want to believe from specific documents and putting that together to essentially try to live free and try to claim that no laws apply to them, which even if you look at their own belief system, that doesn't make sense, because if you say, well, I'm not a citizen of the United States, I'm a citizen of, let's say, New Jersey. Well, New Jersey still has laws and most crimes are prosecuted at the state level. So what are you really saving yourself from? Like, it just, even that point is very inconsistent. And yeah, I don't think that sovereign citizens will be joining Mensa anytime soon. The redemption movement overlaps with the sovereign citizen movement, with several influential sovereign citizens promoting redemption schemes and ideology. The redemption movement is an offshoot of post-acomodists like the sovereign citizen movement. One such supporter was Roger Elvick, a former North Dakota farmer who had lost his farm in a business deal. He became the national spokesman for the Committee of States, a Paul State successor organization that engaged in open rebellion against tax authorities. According to the Anti-Defamation League, Elvick was associated with the Aryan Nations, a racist prison gang, during the 1980s. Elvick sold a book, The Redemption Package, that encouraged people to claim large refunds and information rewards from the Internal Revenue Service, or the IRS, and then pay their debts with quote-unquote sight drafts, which are worthless checks, issued by his own company, Common Title Bond and Trust. Elvick was convicted and imprisoned for his activities, as were several of his accomplices. Debt cancellation schemes and prosecution, which were similar to Elvick's, continued through the 1990s, including Family Farm Preservation and the Montana Freeman. Elvick resumed his activities after his release in 1997, giving seminars around the country, and the use of redemption schemes surged. Around 1999, Elvick conceived the straw man theory, which states that legal and financial claims brought against an individual are really claims against a fictitious legal person or quote-unquote strong man. The theory builds on and ties together several pseudo-legal concepts alleging that government authority is illegitimate, as well as monetary and banking conspiracy theories, and also incorporates the belief in a secret government-controlled bank account. The strawman, Elvick alleged, was in possession of the secret account, but the individual was its rightful owner and could petition for access. The theory also gives a specific role to the Uniform Commercial Code, which provides an interstate standard for documents such as driver's licenses or for bank accounts, as sovereign citizens believe the UCC to be a codification of the illegitimate commercial law ruling in the United States. Adherence to the strongman theory sees this as evidence that the associated laws and financial obligations do not apply to them, but instead to the quote-unquote strawman.
The state of Ohio charged Elvick with corrupt business activity in 2003, and he returned to prison after being sentenced to 4 years. Elvick's conceptions and schemes and variations thereof have since remained a mainstay of the pseudo-law environment. They have been used and adapted in the United States, Canada, and other English-speaking countries by many tax protesters or conspiracy theorists, and more broadly, by people seeking a remedy for their financial stresses or willing to fight what they perceive as government oppression. The details of redemption schemes vary, but they typically rest on the same assumptions. First, a distinction between a living individual and a corresponding legal person or straw man. Then, valuable property associated with the legal person, but rightfully belonging to the individual. And lastly, a supposed procedure by which the individual can claim the property to pay debts. Promoters justify these assumptions with elaborate historical tales. The most common explanation claims that the United States went bankrupt when it abandoned the gold standard in 1933 and started using its citizens as collateral so that it could borrow money. Supposed procedures for using the non-existent quote-unquote straw man funds include filing a UCC-1 financing statement or UCC-3 amended statement against the straw man, passing a birth certificate or other official document as if it were a bond, submitting documents to the Secretary of the Treasury, asserting copyright on a name, paying bills with self-printed or promoter-printed checks known as bills of exchange or site drafts, charging bills to a quote-unquote treasury direct account identified by a social security number, returning bills, collection letters, and court notices with quote-unquote accepted for value or quote-unquote taken for value and other language stamped or written across them, reporting the funds as tax withheld via Form 1099 OID to offset tax liability, and corresponding with red ink. The United States government has successfully prosecuted and convicted a number of redemption scheme participants. The convictions include forgery, providing false information, passing fictitious financial instruments, defrauding the United States, counterfeiting, impeding administration, filing false tax returns, money laundering, and wire fraud. Aside from the risk of criminal charges, redemption processes also fail to discharge debts. In a frequently cited 2007 foreclosure case, a debtor attempted to pay her home mortgage with a redemption, quote-unquote, bill of exchange at the suggestion of promoter Barton Butts. A United States District Court concluded that, quote, the legal authorities plaintiff cites and the facts she alleges suggest that she did not tender payment, but rather a worthless piece of paper. Other courts addressing claims nearly identical to plaintiffs have found likewise, end quote.
To caution people away from redemption schemes, several U.S. agencies have issued warnings against them. Both the FBI and the Treasury Direct website have posted statements that redemption schemes are fraudulent. The Inspector General of the Treasury, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, and various Federal Reserve banks have warned that the Treasury and Federal Reserve banks do not maintain draft accounts for individuals and will not honor any individual drafts. The IRS has announced that attributing tax liabilities to a quote-unquote straw man is a frivolous position that can result in a $5,000 administrative penalty. It included the Form 1099 OID variation of the redemption scheme in its quote-unquote Dirty Dozen list of prominent tax scams every year from 2009 to 2019. The Comptroller of the Currency has noted that in addition to being fraudulent and ineffective, redemption schemes can be used for identity theft. Outside the United States, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand responded to a 2017 information request by stating that birth certificates are not investment securities and that redemption processes are scams. Jenny, what are your thoughts on the redemption movement and their various ways of trying to get out of bills and tax liabilities and all things related to their responsibilities?
Again, it's definitely people just kind of like picking and choosing and trying their best. It seems very, very predatory to me and a scam, like you just said. I'm sure the people that, you know, started it were vulnerable in the sense that, like we said, it's people that are maybe not in the best financial place in their life. And it just has spiraled into more people like going after vulnerable people. And it's upsetting. I do think our tax system is very confusing. And I'm sure that they do use that to continue to take advantage of people, which is really upsetting to see. I just think it's all so ridiculous. I mean, nobody wants to pay taxes, but like if they truly are going to go towards like fixing things in your community or like the country, then like, yes, that is good in my opinion. I know some people would disagree, but I don't know. It just is upsetting to see people get taken advantage of. What do you think?
I agree. And I just want to add that these are definitely people that, although they may be going through some type of financial difficulty, they, in my opinion, are not using their time wisely. If you just look at the procedures that these individuals are supposed to file to try to, you know, assert their sovereign citizens' rights and their belief, this is like a full-time job that they're undertaking. You know, in preparation for this episode, I dug into the different like PDFs and forms, and just going through it and not even like filling it out or, you know, taking very much effort to look up the information that was being asked was cumbersome. So I can just imagine how much time it would take for someone that was actually trying to fill out these forms, get them sent in, all for nothing, because it's complete hogwash and made up. And like you said, our tax system is complicated, right? And it definitely seems in some ways to be purposefully complicated so that certain entities can make a profit off of, you know, navigating the tax code for other people. But as U.S. citizens, we do have a tax obligation. And I feel like if sovereign citizens really want to get away from that tax obligation, they can always officially renounce their citizenship. There is a process for that. Pay the fees, pay whatever tax liabilities they may have, and then move to a country where they feel the tax code better suits them. Be a truly stateless person. But every time I read into sovereign citizens, they seem to be a group of people that only want to adhere to the laws that benefit them. And if it doesn't benefit them, then they're going to go into some 1899 code that has probably been written over 100 times to support them just doing some mess up stuff, not being able to follow laws that we all have to follow. So the redemption schemes, I feel like it's just an offshoot of that. It's just a more specific way for sovereign citizens to pretend that, in this case, financial laws somehow don't apply to them. And like you said, as a scam, it definitely can be used to hurt vulnerable people who likely not even trying to be sovereign citizens, not trying to, you know, go down that rabbit hole. They're just trying to handle their tax liabilities. They're trying to get from under the thumb of big banks. And you have the Google rabbit hole that will lead you to a lot of false information that can get you in a lot more trouble and a lot more debt than you started out with. I mean, the IRS charging you $5,000 in an administrative penalty is not chump change. It's not a little bit of money. And if you're already having financial difficulty, it could be the thing that sends you over that line. And we definitely don't want to see that for any individual, especially someone who's already struggling.
That wraps up this week's case. Thank you for listening. Let us know in the comments what you think about the 2010 West Memphis shooting. You can read more about this case and how to support us in the links below. We will be back next week with a brand new episode focused on the Colonial Parkway. As always, stay safe.